You are now tuning in to the Own the Build podcast. Join C-Link's very own Paul Hemming, where each week he interviews experts from the world of construction and asks all the important questions around intelligent construction management.
Hello and welcome to episode 162 of the Own the Build podcast with me, Paul Hemming. Again, we are back in the studio, Chris and I. We're returning to the Future of Contracting series today. And as always, I have linked in the show notes an article which I wrote this time on the topic of what can only be described as the dreaded tender analysis, tender evaluation, tender equalization, as I heard it called the other day, process, and how AI can impact it. What our experiences are as QSs, Chris, me and all of you guys listening, and what we as a business are going to do to shift the narrative. So as ever, Chris is back, our CVO, Chief Visionary Officer. He loves banging on about vision and a vision for a new place, a new industry. So welcome back to the show, mate. How's it going?
It seems like only yesterday I was here.
Only hours ago, right? Yeah, but here we are. We're back again after 4 long weeks. I pine for these moments of isolation with you in the studio, mate. So let's talk about my article. And I'll explain the reason why I wrote it was to shed a light on what we are doing as a business to shift tender analysis, and why the way that tender analysis works to date has been ridiculous. So I'm going to talk to you about my experience of subcontracting. And we were a huge curtain walling company. And when I would be doing my tendering, and often it was for install only contractors, but you would have BOQ with a couple of hundred lines of different items, range from different floor levels, different projects, cladding types, curtain wall types. All of this is really relevant to me, but that process will be really relevant to everyone listening, right? So we would have 4 tender returns back. I would have to go through the process. And in that company, we had a standard tender analysis template, and it was copy-paste. Then looking at the bottom and seeing if there was extras or if anything has been qualified in or excluded out by various different contractors. And this is just like the financial tender analysis, right? And so I absolutely hated it as a QS because I just thought it was a complete waste of time, could potentially make loads of errors. And to be honest with you, we talk about how long it took, maybe for us, maybe 4, 5, 6 hours to do that tender analysis process. But you might actually be doing it over 3 weeks because, you know, tender one comes back on day one, tender two, day four, tender three, day 17. You know what I mean? So it would actually be something that you were doing forever, it felt like. And saying that, when I was commercial manager, commercial lead in that company, I was absolutely adamant that it had to be done and it had to be done right. Because it's as the manager, right? You're like, I need this. It really gives you that clarity. But the whole tender analysis process, as I saw it, was first, tender price analysis, apples with apples, right? So you wanted to get that. And then secondly, tender compliance analysis. So what is the contractor's suitability? What have they excluded? What have they not excluded? What are their insurances? What are their accreditations? Blah, 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 blah. And those two matters, I honestly think would take typically at least a day for me to just equalize and get to a position where I could then say, okay, right, this is the circumstance. These are the 4 bids. What's your experience of the dreaded tender analysis process?
You're just taking me to some real dark places, Paul.
No one cares about QSs. We don't know what we go through, guys. This is awful.
Got the world's smallest violin here. I mean, it was the task that no one ever wanted to do because I feel like the manual part that takes the most, which is the laborious task, is quite low value. In terms of, you know, you're getting a highly experienced, highly trained, expensive QS to join the dots.
Copy paste.
Yeah, I mean, it's just not a good use of anyone's time. What they should be spending their time on is more like the risk, understanding the rates, etc. It was how you've explained it, and you can imagine when I was working on a project which could consist of maybe 40 packages, it's a lot of tender analysis, and some are easier than others, but then some are more, way more complicated, particularly when they may or may not have allowed for spec, and you've got to really start digging into the detail, different sheets of paper. Have they allowed for this? Have they allowed for that? And getting underneath the skin of each quote is very time consuming and doesn't feel rewarding at all, really.
Yeah, it's funny because so I was on with Tier 1 contractor yesterday, showing them what we've done, and they were talking me through their challenges and talking me through their process. They called what I call the tender analysis, what I know you call the tender analysis, tender equalization. And just thinking out loud now, I'd never heard it called tender equalization. I actually think that the tender analysis and what we're going to talk about today is two parts. One is tender equalization and one is analysis. Do you see what I mean? So the first point of call is get the four quotes together, line them up, equal them, get all of the pre-qual done, line up the insurances, blah, 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 blah. Same with the exclusions, same
allowances,
with qualifications.
Yeah.
Allowances. That's the equalization process, right? Which is so manual. And for all of the world's smallest violin QSs out there, it's a nightmare, right? But it's part and parcel of what we've had to do. But then, like you just said there, actually what you want to be paying your senior QS, any QS to be doing is the analysis, right? But you spend so much time on the equalization, like hours, days, that the analysis part actually takes a few hours. Like that's almost the bit that you rush through because you've lost so much time.
Yeah, and like you just said, rush through, you make a concession or you might make a mistake because you're burnt out and you know there might be a certain item within that quote that you haven't quite like validated, or that you've just thought, oh, we'll deal with that, don't worry about it. And it ends up being a big problem later on down the line. And that, I think, the industry is in this method. It likes to absorb energy from people.
In the wrong spaces.
In the wrong places, yeah. And I think tender analysis or the equalization part is the wrong part.
Yeah.
You want your QS to be adding value. Them lining up the dots is not adding value. It is performing a heavily manual process that hasn't changed for decades.
Yeah.
And that needs to change.
I completely agree, and I'm going to go right to the heart of a ridiculous conversation that I had with the same Tier 1 contractor. They said to me, so as part of what we do, we try and quantify numbers, and I know you've written a QS algorithm for what QSs spend hours on per project, which, as sad as it is, interesting, honestly, and we'll probably get to that. But this main contractor, commercial director, he said to me, we do 100 projects per year. We do 20 packages per project, roughly. All of these are on average numbers. I said, how long do you think you spend doing a tender analysis? Now, what he said to me was, you know, a painting and decorating package, you know, it's quite simple. That won't take huge amounts of time, maybe 3-4 hours to equalize it. Then you're doing your analysis. And that distinction between equalization and analysis is key, right? And then how long does it take you to do a CDP, complicated M&E, equalization, curtain walling, groundworks, all of these different things? He said those could take days. And so on average, he said 8 hours. Let's say it takes a day on average to do a single tender analysis. Would that kind of chime roughly with your experience?
Yeah, I think so. What that person was saying there is that some are easier than others, but like getting into sometimes the M&E packages, there's lots of spec changes there. And I think it would be fair to say about 8 hours-ish as an average, if you're going to draw a line through the middle. It would come to that. But that doesn't, there's so many variables on a project, you know, with that QA.
Yeah, naturally, right? Yeah. It's hard. And these are all on average, right? And that is the caveat at the start. But so 100 projects per year, 20 packages per project, approximately or on average, 8 hours doing tender equalization. That is a total of 16,000 hours of quantity surveying time, which, based on the average UK salary of 58 grand a year, 57,500, that is £500,000 that Tier 1 contractor spends exclusively on tender equalization. And we'll hear people in the background going, well, yeah, this is what QSs do, but it shouldn't be. It's tender equalization is not what a QS should do. Tender analysis is what a QS should do. And we have been looking into how we can solve this for it's kind of the jewel in the crown, isn't it? It's been our North Star. It's where we've been looking at and what we want to change. Just talk to me about how you think the tender analysis could be in a utopian world.
I've just been doing the maths in my head, and I think I've probably spent 10% of my life doing tender analysis. So my vision for like what tender analysis will look like in the future, particularly with AI and what we are building as a company, is something that is doing all that heavy lifting for you. And I see it in a two-stage approach. I feel like the equalization part, we will be able to do it in minutes. With the analysis part, you're totally disconnected from what is the market rate today. I know the competitive tender, it should really give you that, but where's your base rate? Where's the baseline? What did you pay last time? You know, you've got to go dig through loads of files, maybe ask your fellow QS, what did you pay recently for this? There's nothing really showing you that. And that's something I can see our system will leverage for these businesses and the risk analysis part. So there's loads of packages that have slight and different nuance to them that get overlooked for it pretty much every package, because you're starting from ground zero, like we discussed in one of our previous podcasts, where you start your project again and it's from ground zero and you dig out your old scope of works and then you're checking through, oh, have I allowed for that? What our analysis system will be able to do is leverage the risks and identify allowances, exclusions, inclusions from previous projects to make sure that the QS hasn't missed these items before letting the project.
So what your view is that we're going to aggregate all of the data from various different groundworks packages, M&E packages in those examples, right? And look at what the previous exclusions, qualifications were and draw them out so that actually becomes part of the analysis process.
Exactly. I mean, you want to get these things clarified and not be grey going into these contracts and agreements with people before they start on site. Let's get it out. Let's get it fleshed out and make sure it's robust and comprehensive.
And so that rather than, in this case, spending 16,000 hours of quantity surveying time or £500,000 doing tender analysis, tender equalization, what we think main contractors, in fact, all it goes PQS, main contract QS, subcontract QS, right? We're all doing it. So all of those guys can actually spend their time on risk and on value as opposed to on data entry. And it might sound absolutely mental to some people thinking, did QSs really spend 16,000 hours in my company doing manual data entry and equalization? But we do, and it's insane. And it just doesn't need to happen anymore. And what we are working on, in fact, what we have all but finished, is a world where no matter what the package, the equalization is done, right? And where could we then take it with those qualifications and exclusions? Where, you're the visionary officer. Where do you think that it should be in terms of, like, let's keep it really simple. Let's call it a groundworks package, right? Main contractor procures a groundworks package. They issue out their tender. When their prices are returned, what should the process be?
So I'm going to give you a couple of examples of where I see tender analysis going and equalization. So quotes could come back in. So you've got a BOQ. Quotes coming in more of a standard format, a bit easier to line up. But then we've got these off-piste, let's say, contracts and packages. So
what you mean to say that a subby will return a price that will not be in the format that you asked for, or will have a load of qualifications?
I mean, it's been heard of, I think. Yeah, I believe I heard something down
once or twice. Yeah.
So, you know, let's talk about like another world where it doesn't come in like a standard format. We want to be picking that up and trying to aggregate that into the right line level where it's, you know, this is for foundations. We understand this. The AI has picked this up. So we can start picking the pieces together without having to do any manual process. Packages such as M&E can be really complex, and different standardization will be harder to do. But there's so many risk identifications, which I think the real value is going to come from by understanding these quotes, inclusions, exclusions. So let's take an M&E package, for example, that includes wet underfloor heating that's going to need screeding. What you want to be picking up there from a risk perspective is who's going to do the screeding. So you need to get that clarified. So when someone starts on site, when the M&E contractor's on site, they're like, when's your screeders turning up? And we're like, no, we've excluded screeding. That's down to you. That's builders.
Yeah.
And it's things like that, or a dry lining package, right? There's always access hatches required for, you know, when you're in flats and things like that.
Yeah.
How many access hatches are there? Have we allowed a provisional quantity at least just to so we've got a rate agreed. Let's have a provisional quantity and we'll just draw down from it. Thinking about these things and having the proper analysis at that stage to add the value and summarizing it, because some of it might already be agreed or what, however, but you've got to at least identify that from a risk perspective. So we're saying, look, these are considerations you need to make, and how comprehensive would you be and more effective would you be as a QS if you could just do your job
as, like, as ever. You are a million steps further down the trail than I am, because I see this astronomic value. There's a quantities of vein shortage. We can save 16,000 hours for one company. Like, I'm just thinking, doing the equalization is such a big piece of the puzzle that will just transform the way quantities of airs feel about the job that they do, the enjoyment levels that you get out of doing your job, and also how main contractors, subcontractors, everyone performs. It's just going to have a dramatic impact. I can't wait to see that impact. But as always, you're way down the track, and it makes so much sense, doesn't it? Actually, what you're describing is the machine can learn all of the challenges that you have had previously on packages. So you've described a few with M&E, dry lining, etc., and actually start to draw those out and look at the exclusions, the qualifications, the allowances, understand from previous experiences exactly the challenge that we've had before. And we're working, aren't we, on analysing and reviewing quotes as well as much, much more. So it always mesmerises me, Chris, how you are way beyond my thinking, but that's why you're in the role that you are. So there's a lot of really interesting things that we've just discussed, and let's continue this conversation, but let's first just take a little break. Records, records, records. So often you hear this phrase in construction, don't you? Transparency between main and subcontractors can always be a challenge, and I've been on both sides of the table, so I understand. Our app, SeaLink, fosters engagement and records all the communications for both main and subcontractors through the tender and contract process. That means you're going to reduce your risks, reduce disputes, and reduce miscommunication. Imagine a world where you had all of your tender addendums, all of your tender communications, every drawing, every document you'd ever created on a tender process recorded, not just for one subcontractor, but for every subcontractor. It will massively reduce the chance of variations, massively reduce the chance of miscommunication and disputes, and that's what we've built at SeaLink. To find out more, go and watch the video that's in the show notes right now, and then book a demo, and one of our team will walk you through exactly how it works. So, Christopher, let's now talk about quantity surveying time and what a quantity surveyor spends their time doing. For QSs listening, this will probably resonate. For PMs, directors, people who aren't QSs, who haven't gone through the process, probably mesmerized by the amount of time that you've spent doing certain activities. And just talk to me, you built out what we're calling internally a QS algorithm, which explains what a QS does on each single project and the number of hours it roughly takes. Talk to me about what that is and why you did it.
Oh, well, it was a pretty exciting thing to do in a very sad way, but
this actually, you are joking here, but I can assure everyone listening, Chris told me that this was the best thing he's done in ages and he enjoyed it thoroughly. So what was it?
So I took myself back to some, happy days, main contracting, almost the start of my main contracting career and what it looked like. So I created a bit of a persona for myself, gave kind of an idea of what the company size was, what their supply chain strength might be. And then I kind of start breaking down the tasks. So like it or not, for a QS, probably 60-70% of it is just very package related. Mm-hmm. So like you're almost like the center point for a QS is just looking at the packages he's got and then performing tasks in a very almost like a linear way. But that's never the case. So I took a typical project that we may have been working on, the typical packages we would have procured, gave them like a complexity level, a risk level, how long they would maybe on site for this kind of, mm-hmm. For this algorithm. And then started plotting out each task, taking it from like A to Z for that package.
So task one being?
Subcontractor selection.
Okay. Task two being?
Getting the tender documents, I think, together. I'm trying to remember.
Then you go through like tender process, mid-tender, meetings, blah, 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 all the way to final account.
All the way to final account. And then plotting those against the complexity, risk levels, etc. And it would give me a rough estimate of how long I would be spending on those elements.
And just so it's clear, I've seen this behemoth document, but for instance, creating a tender on a M&E package, you'd have allocated many more hours than creating a tender on a painting decorating package, and same as you've kind of gone through it. So this was you not looking on average. This was you looking in depth at all the different steps, including payments, applications, et cetera, for packages and allocating time to them so that you could understand how much time a QS needs to do a proper job. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. So trying to give an accurate for that kind of particular persona, kind
mid-level
of project.
QS, right?
Yeah, yeah. And that kind of like type of project. And
we're going to say the average QS, right?
The average.
And also it's you, so definitely.
Definitely below average, right?
Mediocre QS, maybe we should classify it.
So, and then, you know, then we lead into like the client tasks and all those things. And assuming a job runs well, and it's almost a bit of an assumption of 100% efficiency, yeah. Right? Which we know people just aren't going to be 100% efficient. I certainly wasn't. And then if you throw in a job that has more packages that they have to procure, they might say, oh, it's only a couple of stairs or something, or it's only a couple of ladders. You've still got to follow that process through to the finish.
Final account.
Exactly. So throw in more like extra procurement levels compared to another project, then throw in maybe a job that isn't running smoothly. Maybe the design information isn't quite great. So you're having more extension of times, more RFIs are getting raised from your subcontractors. The time is just going to extend and extend.
Yeah.
Then you throw in the people are going to want to make their money off the average salary of a QS was what, 57,500. They're going to want to make the most out of them and put them on another project or straddle another project. Yeah. They've got to come do that process. You're going to cut corners.
But just so the summary of all of the QS tasks added up together came out to the fact that a QS needed to properly execute a project. This is a main contract QS, needed 48 working weeks to deliver a job, right? And so 48 working weeks, actually in some ways it's kind of rather nice, doesn't it? Because when you subtract from a normal calendar year your holidays and all those bits and pieces, 48 working weeks, you actually think, God, that's not bad actually. Yeah, QS probably, 48 working weeks might be a bit tight, but that's fair enough. However, you then pile on top of that variations, change, all of these extensions of time, things go wrong, your boss wants you to go and work on another project. I was never on one project. I was subcontractor, but I would have been on 5 or 6 projects often at sometimes. You would have been on what, 1 or 2?
Yeah, we'd straddled like almost like 1.5 periods where one would be closing out and one would be, you know, just starting or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, you'd be straddling too.
Exactly, yeah. I think most people listening will have been on 1, 1.5 or 2 at various different times. And in some cases, that's fine. In other cases, it isn't. And when I was looking at this algorithm, as we called it, and I looked at what you'd done, I thought 48 working weeks, that's not bad. But then I realized you were on 2 jobs, right? And so this kind of tells you the problem, right? And we're going to link it back to tender analysis, right? We're going to save you a huge amount of time on tender analysis. But difficult question for you to answer maybe, but you were a QS who needed 48 working weeks, which you didn't have. And actually you were doing 1.5 jobs. So my math is terrible, but 60, 70-ish, right? Working weeks to do your job well, there's no way, and as good a QS as you are, and I have nothing but respect for the quality of your experience and for the way you go about your work, how many times did you cut corners? And on that list of 20 activities, how many times do you say, well, I just do not have time to do X on this package?
Quite often.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of areas to cut corners on as a QS, whether that's subcontractor selection.
I'll just go with Bob, I know him.
Tender analysis is another area that you might cut corners on. Mm. You might not even look at the other quotes because you just think, well, I'll just go with the cheapest and validate that and just take it from there and not even give any feedback to the other subcontractors and where they're at. So you frustrate the supply chain and your existing subcontractors you're working with. There could be all sorts of areas like client variations, just a general engagement. You're going to make so many concessions because you're stretched because of the high manual processes that are involved.
Did you ever, again, difficult question, did you ever feel like a corner that you cut impacted a project?
I think there was one package I think I cut a corner on in terms of like maybe like risk distribution. Mm. I gave them a big air handling unit that we could have purchased. Mm. We had a purchase order basically we could have placed and yeah. got that done separately. But I rolled it into their package.
Didn't
without
have time. You do
without realizing what the risk was and really properly assessing. And it almost delayed the project. It was tight, you know, like days yeah. were in it. And it caused a lot of stress in the team, a lot of unnecessary yeah. meetings and energy taken out of it, out of everybody. I could have just placed that order for the purchase of that and then got the air conditioning people to deal with the rest of it. And I could have just dealt with that part, but that was timing issues really. Yeah, I thought, lump it into there, I'll let them deal with it. And then they hadn't procured it basically, and then tried to come up with an alternative solution that wasn't viable. And the M&E designer was like, no, I'm not having that unit. I want this one. And yeah, it was touch and go really.
And so why are we talking about this, right? Why are we talking about this? We've been sat here talking on these four weekly episodes, Chris, talking about the fact that there's a QS shortage, the fact that everything takes QSs too long, world's smallest violin for the QSs, right? But the reason why we're talking about this is, like, this is one of the key tenets of what creates problems on projects. Your QS, your vital resource, doesn't have the time to commit to procurement. And I briefly explained what I consider like tender analysis, tender equalization. You kind of talk there about at times you might have to cut corners on tender analysis and tender equalization. What would you consider like world-class tender analysis? What would, like, when you could do it to the absolute best, it was, how would you do it
in the current state of Excel and Word? And
yeah
okay, so
because you'd have done it, right? You'd have done it on packages which were CDP, high risk. Your bosses were all over you. You'd have been like, this one, I'm going to nail it. How would you nail
it? You want on a good audit trail, right? So obviously at least three quotations are back. Yep. Engaged subcontractors. I would have met them on site, made sure they return on time. So a couple of chasers. So I am, when I'm coming to the table to do my tender analysis, they're all there.
Yeah.
Ideally, be it bill of quantities, Paul, you know, I do love a BOQ. Yeah. Would be really, really nice and just helpful to have it in that format expressed that I really want them to do it in this format and don't deviate from it because I need it.
Saves you time.
Yeah, it saves me time. So then let's say in this ideal world, they come back in identical formats on the BOQ. It's an easy process then for me to start lining it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Please don't send it in PDF that I then have to ask to give it in me Excel. So please send it in Excel.
JPEG.
The screenshot on your phone. And then I can easily start lining them up. And then it's about, so I've done this, the manual process a lot easier, but I mean, seldom did we have a BOQ or seldom did subcontractors return them in the state that we wanted to, but let's say they did. And then I've done that manual process is then only an hour, let's just say. I've not had to chase anyone. They've come on time. They're in the same format. And now I can start assessing allowances, inclusions, exclusions, and really getting under the skin and just thinking, actually, is this, are they quite right for this project? I know there was a good upsell from them, but well, it might be too big. Can you give me some references?
Why have they excluded that? That doesn't feel right. Why have they got
this? It's the adding value stage. Yeah. And so it's the manual process is only to like an hour, let's say. But I could then extend that into the analysis stage and then actually start thinking more, can we actually value engineer this together and get a better end product for both of us and make more money? And that's what my ideal tender analysis process would look like.
And the point being that more often than not, well, not more often, I'm probably doing you an injustice here, that at times you wouldn't be able to do that or you wouldn't commit to that because you weren't doing 40, you didn't have 48 working weeks, you had 96, or you were doing, this is, you know, for the uninitiated who is listening to this, the person who isn't a QS, you might think, ah, really? But this is the experience, and this is not the only reason, but this is the reason why there's scope gaps. This is the reason why you end up with disputes. You just explained putting a bit of equipment into someone's package, which otherwise you wouldn't have done, but you ran out of time, right? And so I think we've all got to learn it's why we're talking about it, right? And what we want to change in the industry. And what we want to change is our focus is exclusively your QS algorithm, 48 working weeks. Let's take that and make it 44, 40, 36, so that a QS actually has time to add value, reduce risk, and make the project right. And that's what we are doing with tender analysis. We'll talk to you about how you can see that at the end of the show. With the way our business works now, Chris, there is people who are construction focused, you and I, ex-QSs, and people who are not construction focused. And you're working on this tender analysis project, tender equalization project. What's your experience? Like, what can we learn? What have you learned going through the process of building this product without or alongside people who are not construction experienced?
It's very enjoyable. Really? I love working with them because they don't come from our construction background. They're looking at it from completely different angles. They're like, tell me the problem, let's understand the problem, and almost don't need to involve me. I share my experience, how I would have done it, and they pick holes in it and thinking, why does the industry do it?
You're using Excel and Word for £1 million package. Yep, sorry, we are.
And then they, you know, you can see them innovating themselves and how to create this solution based on, like, they'll be speaking to existing clients, they'll be speaking to myself, researching. The depth that they go into to then create this solution is so impressive, and it's really enjoyable getting a fresh set of eyes on a construction issue.
Yeah, because we think that the way to solve things is what our mindset has led to us, but people from finance, all these different backgrounds, have a completely different experience. So my final question on this, there is absolutely no, we are so proud of what we have built, and I encourage anyone to come and have a look at tender analysis. I've asked this question probably to you, but I've asked it to many people who have been my guests before, and it's AI and quantity surveying. We employ machine learning technicians. We are building AI products to serve the QS, not to wipe the QS out, is my view. What's your view on the way, and you're now engaged in it, you've done both, right? So you're perfectly placed to answer this. What's your view, honestly, on the impact AI will have on quantity surveying?
Better job satisfaction, maybe attract more people to the industry as QSs. I honestly think, you know, you're not going to wipe QSs off. It's just it's a stupid phrase for people to actually even suggest, because you need the experience to help, you know, actually connect it all and make it happen. What the AI is going to do is empower QSs to make better decisions, and where they can add more value, whether that is, we talk about value engineering a lot, but what about the value that a QS could bring to relationships and building that with the supply chain, with the clients, and then creating this bigger pool of people and companies to work with and for. And you can only do that if they leverage technology and we give them that time back to create those relationships and be more collaborative.
And if I was to ask you, or I was to play devil's advocate now, a couple of QSs have thrown this at me, is AI could never equalize a tender to the level I can equalize a tender. How would you respond to that?
Check out our software.
Yeah, that wasn't what I was asking. But like, I actually have taught to that point quite a lot, and I genuinely believe that software AI can equalize the tender far better and far more efficiently than a human. Just lining it up, comparing prequels, comparing prices, that absolutely. But it goes to your point, right? They can't analyze it. They can't build a relationship. They can't negotiate the pricing, negotiate the T's and C's. They can't do all of that, the robots. Yeah. But absolutely, without question, they can equalize a lot quicker and a lot better than you can, quantity surveyors.
Absolutely. And I think that's the important note, is we can leverage the technology to improve efficiency, but we're not going to take away that human aspect that you really need to, like, get into nitty-gritty of the package and properly negotiate it and take it forward, because software won't be able to do that. Only humans can.
Yeah. And it goes back to that feeling that I said at the start, that dreaded feeling of, great that I've now got that third price back, but I've got to do that damn tender analysis. Imagine the feeling of getting the third price back and thinking, now my tender analysis is done. And that's what we've built. And without crowing about it too much, if you are a main contractor, if you're a QS department, you've got to get in touch, have a chat with us. We'd love to show you it, whether that's Chris, me, or one of the team. We don't usually do this at the end of the show, but this is something which we are incredibly proud of. And yeah, we'd love to show you. So we'll put details in the show notes. Christopher, tender analysis, tick. Who knows what we're going to do next, mate. But thanks for coming on and sharing your thoughts, as always.
Thank you. Loved it. Speak soon.
Cheers, mate. Catch you later.